Welcome to the latest episode of the 21cc podcast, brought to you by the Chartered Institute of Building. I'm Justin Stanton, editor of CM Digital.
And I'm Mark Glover, managing editor of Construction Management.
Today we're discussing humanoid construction robots on sites. That's right, not quadrupedal robots like Spot the Robot Dog or robot bricklayers that are more akin to automotive production line robots. No, we're talking about robots with two legs, two arms, and something that looks like a face.
Indeed, from Maria in Metropolis to C-3PO in Star Wars, and from Marvin, of course, the paranoid android in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, to Data in Star Trek The Next Generation, people prefer robots to look like, well, people. And while those are all fictional, the end of April saw two major announcements turn that fiction into fact. First, Tilbury Douglas revealed its site trials of a humanoid construction robot named Douglas. And second, a summit was staged in London to establish the roadmap to develop mass-produced, multitasking humanoid construction robots to be available as a service soon after 2030.
Mark, the crucial question. Are they here to take construction jobs from real people?
Well, let's set the context for the possible rise of the machines. On the one hand, we have an enduring skills crisis allied to productivity issues. And on the other, we have critical infrastructure projects to be delivered, and of course, housing targets to be met. Robots working more effectively and for longer, especially performing dangerous tasks and operating in environments that are hazardous to humans, must be part of the way forward.
Clearly, robots are not a panacea to all of construction's ills, and their path to implementation is strewn with many and varied obstacles, as you found out when you spoke to Mark Buckle, Technical Director at Tilbury Douglas.
Yes, that's right. And I found it interesting, actually. Mark was pretty keen to dispel the idea of robots taking over human jobs. And he actually championed the experienced human workforce. He says at one point, Douglas, and I quote him, isn't there to replace our site managers. The skill set within our site managers is so multifaceted nowadays. We need their skill set. You cannot replace the 20 years of experience of a site manager with a robot. You just cannot do that. And there's no point kidding ourselves that we can. And I think he realizes actually that Douglas or other robots are there to assist and help with productivity that I mentioned earlier, that ultimately a robot will always need some sort of human oversight. But we also talked about some of the challenges involved with Douglas on site, and there are a few, such as battery life. Douglas carries three batteries with him that they swap in and out, and each offers a approximately 2.5 hours of juice. Indeed, Mark says it's not that different to a cordless power drill, which I think is an interesting comparison. But actually, one of the main challenges, Justin, is around safety and how they operate Douglas in a safe way. There's no regulation yet, and it does feel like the technology is outpacing legislation. So it will be interesting to see how the regulator, the HSE, keep up. But Mark says the whole process, importantly, has been safety-led. He worked closely with Tilbury Douglas's health and safety team throughout. And in fact, the risk assessments were pretty basic, you know, just not putting people in harm's way. And it's here, actually, that we pick up the interview when I asked Mark if Douglas has a handler and how that actually works. Does it stop if it's in close contact with a human, or there's a sort of perimeter?
It does. It's more of stability issues. He is very stable. I mean, you can kick him and he'll stay up. And we've done all those parts. At this moment in time, while we're doing the trials, until we can understand that more, we are segregating the area. He's only walking around areas where people aren't working at the moment. But we will expand that as we get. It's just getting confident on it. You know, does it walking across the, I mean, the bit on the video where he's walking over the loose thing, that was, you know, clear the area, everybody, because we don't, you know, it's this, we don't know how to do it. So the right risk assessment is don't put anybody in harm's way while we're testing it. And we'll get more familiar with that as it transpires over the next couple of months. You know, it's right the way down to odd questions about, you know, high visibility. What does the high visibility look like? Which we've come to a conclusion, and he's about to get painted. But also, is he a piece of plant? Does he need a beacon? It's, you know, these are all the bits that we're trying to work out.
I think the safety element is it's fascinating, and I actually think the safety sector, and particularly in construction, is on board with moving forward and using technology, because it, as you said, I think in safety there's a lot of admin, there's a lot of risk assessments, and something like AI and robots can sort of help with that. So I think actually that the safety is on board with it, but of course, how did you still got to take into account risk assessment? How much did safety form, and did you work with the safety guys, the safety team, to say, look, this is what we're doing, and were they like, okay, great, or were they like, hang on, let's just slow down a sec, Mark?
I mean, it's been exciting working with the safety guy. I mean, it's safety led. I mean, whenever you trial any technology, safety is paramount. You know, it's a and obviously as a team, we've enjoyed working with the health and safety people to do these risk assessments, which, you know, obviously things that fall over, you know, we can do risk assessments, but not ones that walk around and possibly fall over. It's been a quite novel experience in doing that. And we've probably sp yeah we spent at least crikey, I mean, we started doing this in back in December with the safety led side of it, so it's taken quite a long time where we're actually comfortable, because it's not just auto safety for people, it's also safety for the building. You know, it's they are, I mean, he weighs 30 kilo, well, 35 kilos. So he can do some reasonable damage to plasterboard. You know, so and you can certainly walk through a glass pane to glass. So you've got all of this, it's got to be safety led. You know, anything moving, it's no different to bringing in autonomous diggers outside. You know, we've got to really think outside the box on where safety is. And the simplest solution at the moment where we've been is to just clear the area while he's walking, and get comfortable with it.
Forgive me, Mark, if you've answered this already, but it has a handler. Is that a correct term? Someone sort of close, you've got eyes on it, eyeballs, or sort of all the time.
There's a big emergency stop button. There's
Classic.
a big one. Yes, we have a handler at the moment. And once we get that again, he can work autonomously, but we very rarely put him in that mode. We have a test area in Birmingham where we put him in autonomous mode, which is a big warehouse that we have. And we do that in sort of the full autonomy in a bit more of a safe environment. Gotta be so careful nowadays.
I'm fascinated to see how it is regulate, obviously the regulation and any legislation that as because this is the direction of travel now, and it's the way that it's heading, and I think the safety, so HS, I think they're on it, but I be use cases like this are gonna sort of only help. And the data you're gathering, and also brings me on to the next question, really, is that sort of half the battle with safety or tech is adoption, isn't it? And getting culture and getting people to sign up. And I'm just wondering how you what have staff said? What's their feedback been? Has it is it a novelty now, or have there been any kind of, oh bloody hell, this is quite big. What does this mean for me?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, it's like with any technology, there will always be people who are nervous about it. There are going to be the immediate adopters. Fortunately, a lot of our teams are already pretty tech enabled with a lot of the stuff that we do at the moment. You know, we have a significant AI. Everybody's got AI in our business. You know, so they're starting to get used to it. You know, generally the adoption side of it is really about how they can tailor it to how they do their job. I think that's the really important thing. Any change management is you'll get the immediate adopters, and the ones that aren't a bit more hesitant, you've really got to tailor it to them. What are those reservations? What are they? You know, what are you worried about? You know, it's setting up in the morning, or are you worried that it's going to be wrong? Are you worried about, you know, how can we do, you know, overcome those barriers? But it was, I don't see it that different to. I mean, fortunately, I'm old enough to remember mobile phones coming out. You know, so I remember in the first bit of the industry, I mean, when I was a project manager, you know, mobile phones came out and everybody was saying, I never want one of those because everybody can get hold of me all the time. You know, you know, technology takes longer. You know, there's lots of people that, you know, took a long time to get BIM on board, and Everybody works at a different rate. You just got to respect that and tailor it to their fears.
Be interested to hear what you think, but I think with any sort of tech adoption, and this robot in particular, is you do have to have that clear goal. Are you finding, particularly with the point that the goal of the robot is a real sort of business case? It's a business case, it's a bottom line, it's also a return on investment, and I guess the productivity benefits that you find, you can show that as well.
It is. I mean, return on investment is something I'll come on to because I'm not a great. I mean, but yeah, the adoption by staff. I mean, the first thing you've got to be clear, it's not there to replace people. If we went out and said, right, we're going to create a robotic site manager, the resistance would be significant. And that's why in tech, if you work backwards and say, what is that user experience that they're looking for? How can I solve that problem? Then the adoption becomes a lot easier because it's, I'm there till, I'm there 2 hours every day doing a progress report, and I still got this report to write and this report to write. I've got this type of, so we learned a lot. We've learned, well, we're still learning a lot about the AI and how that can help them and things like that, and areas like that. Where so I think a clear message of what the outcome is. Which is why we're ever so specific. It is just there to do a progress report. It's there to do check everything's installed to the model, and it's there to pick up any safety issues on its walk around. It's not there to replace our site managers. And our site managers, the skill set within our site managers is so multifaceted nowadays. That we need their skill set. We can't replace. You can't replace the 20 years of experience of a site manager with a robot. You just cannot do that. And there's no point kidding ourselves that we can. Again, going back to the bricklaying robots, replacing a 20-year seasoned bricklayer with a robot, it's just not viable. And it's not right either. And as also with any AI, you need human oversight. We must have human in it. The way that we treat these things, even when Douglas does produce his reports, they have human oversight to read them and check them. And so you still need that seasoned professional to be the one to do it. And I don't dislike it to saying you've got an assistant and you've asked it to go and do something. You as the manager, you would always check what they've done. I don't like an AI or anything AI or robotics in any different sort of things. They must review it as though they are. They are your assistant.
Good tech, I think, should be seen as an enabler, not a sort of reducer. And this, I think, is where robotics in construction, and construction is such a fertile sector, I think, for taking an innovation. It could lead the way. And I think this is where robotics can't go. And I wonder if that's how you see it eventually panning out, among other plans that you have.
There's the business reason why we're looking at this, and there's two areas of the business that we look. I'm not a great believer that tech should always meet a return on investment. It very rarely does in its initial thing, and it generally comes, again, go back to mobile phones when it was £100 a month for a mobile phone. It's the return on investment just wasn't there, but everybody knew it made their lives easier, and eventually it's come down to be, a pretty standard thing. And I see that with any tech that, so I try not to base it 100% on return on investment because there's so many avenues. And the biggest challenge, of course, is recruitment. Well, we're all working over everybody's working over 100% at the moment because we are losing people out of the industry. We're not replacing them as quickly as we're losing them, and the workload is getting bigger. So realistically, as you're probably aware of most of the stats, that we are heading towards a 20-30% deficit by 2030. And that comes out of two reasons, really. Obviously, we've got the retirements coming, and also we've got the encouragement into the industry. Realistically, unless we embrace technology, I think every business is either going to be a smaller business by 2030 because they haven't got the staff, or they've embraced the technology to fill in that productivity. I mean, productivity in the industry has been around since Albert Bossum in the 1930s. It's been in the Egan report, the Latham report. It's in the farmer, modernize or die, and it's the time where I think we're starting to get to an issue within the industry where we have to address productivity.
Thanks to both Marks. Now, as mentioned earlier, the same week that Tilbury Douglas revealed their site trials, a summit was staged to launch Leo, a humanoid construction robot designed to carry out various site tasks that will be mass-produced and available as a service from 2030. Leo is the vision of Vassos Christostomou, founder of IBE Humanoids. Vassos is also the founder and managing partner of sister business IBE Partnership, which has helped bring Construct CO2, the Niali Visual Planner, and AI for Sight to market. He wants to establish a consortium pulling together academics, construction industry leaders, and software and hardware developers to develop a multitasking, multi-skilled labor platform, a so-called workforce multiplier, and bring it to market. Leo will undertake tasks that are hazardous, repetitive, physically demanding, or undesirable for humans, as well as tasks that rely on consistency, monitoring, or operation outside normal human working hours. The summit attracted a 100-plus audience that not only featured academics and robotics specialists, but also construction clients and major and medium-sized contractors. Vassos emphasized to the audience that Leo will augment rather than replace human judgment, skill, and responsibility, and he invited those present to get involved.
You and the rest of the industry needs to come in, hopefully, with us and inspire it, define it, see it, develop it, test it, take it apart, make sure it works on your own processes, on your own systems, with your own workflows and your own projects, in order to make sure that when it's ready to go out on a construction site, it actually begins to add value from day one.
He explained how Leo will need to be trained.
So how are we going to train Leo? We can't put him next to a bricklayer. We can't, sit him next to a dry liner or a painter and say, show Leo how to do it. In order to train Leo, we need to gather data on how your people do it, undertake those tasks. We need the real-world data, and that has to come from you. What we're going to do with that data? Well, we're going to throw it into what I call the Humanoid Simulation College. You need to teach them offline, in a digital world, how to build something, how to paint, how to decorate, how to cut a wood, how to lay bricks, how to weld, how to pour concrete, or whatever they want you to do. But you've got to teach them digitally, and then once they teach them digitally and the hardware is ready to accept it, then you transfer that digital knowledge into the hardware.
Once this stage is complete, Leo will need to be tested in controlled laboratory environments and then on a controlled site environment with people working alongside the robot. Vassos suggested the 7.7 hectare test site at the Constructionarium in Bircham Newton could be used for the latter. Once these gateways are passed, Leo will need to be tested by contractors on real sites. In order to do so, the people on those sites need to be trained too.
Oh, we can't throw Leo together in a construction site without training the operatives. And we've got 1 million of them to train. Because eventually, by 2035, they will be on every construction site, like it or not, in the UK. So how do we train them? Well, we train them through augmented reality. We put the operatives through a virtual environment to work side by side with Leo, different environments, different scenarios, until such time they are comfortable and ready to be able to work with humanoids as team members.
Vassos imagines Leo being supplied to the wider industry as a service with a subscription-based model.
And that subscription-based model can be based on hourly rates, on weekly or monthly, or even task-specific, output-specific, open to discussion.
One summit attendee asked Vassos about his expectations for pricing for Leo.
Let me put it this way. By 2030, it will be cheaper than when you're paying for a labourer now.
It's not simply a case of developing and deploying robots to carry out existing tasks. There was a consensus among the summit audience that the biggest productivity gains from deploying robots will come from a reimagined construction process. Indeed, while Leo must adapt to construction, the industry should grasp the opportunity to to adapt to Leo.
We need to reimagine construction. That means changing the workflow. So therefore, working with the right academia, working with the right professionals in the industry that will partner with us, then you have those skills, that knowledge, that experience to help you facilitate and help you develop your processes necessary for the production future or the robotic future that's coming along.
Highlighting other benefits of joining in the development of Leo, Vassos added,
don't underestimate the supply chain that's going to come and work with you, the talent, the new generation that will want to work with you because you are seen to be the leader in driving and reimagining construction forward.
We'll continue to monitor the development of Douglas and Leo on CM. And that's all for this episode. If you'd like to share your feedback on the podcast, email us at 21cc@atompublishing.co.uk. And if you're on social media, use the 21cc hashtag to let us know what you think. Thanks for listening.